What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome to another episode of AmericaTrendsPodcast.com and your two friends by now, Larry Rifkin and John Krofcik here.
Hello.
Hey, John. How are you today?
Good. How you doing?
Good. What have you been doing today?
Oh, craziness. But that's another show.
When we get into the studio, it's very relaxing.
We're in
our environment, our natural milieu.
Exactly.
They should lock us in here and just throw food under the door. Well, I got to tell you, John, this is a topic that we're going to deal with in this episode of America Trends Podcast that I've wanted to do for some time because it's so important. Everybody's talking about it. Even the president of the United States himself, Donald J.
What's he talking about?
Well, I'm not going to tell you yet.
Okay.
But I do want to suggest that when you think about American ingenuity and that can-do spirit that we've had over the years, nowhere in my mind has that been better reflected historically in what I would say are big public works projects. I mean, they excite us. When you think about the Hoover Dam,
That's a marvel. Yes.
No, isn't it really?
Yeah, that is
there
incredible.
Are so many incredible engineering marvels that we have designed and built in the United States. Or think about the whole interstate highway system.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. It boggles my brain when I look at what they're doing on 84 and how they put it all together.
Oh, well, we've got a project here in our region. John's localizing the issue, which is fine.
Sorry about that.
No, 84. How about 91? Hike. You think about all the other dams that defy Mother Nature.
Right.
These massive water and sewer systems that really were the hallmarks of modernity. I mean, without them, you really don't have a modern lifestyle. You just don't.
That's true. You're right. It's incredible what we've done.
But we're so long past the time when all of this stuff was built that literally we all, I think I can say for all of us, may I speak for all of us?
Yeah, well, in this case you can.
Well, okay. that we take it all for granted.
We do. We do. It's just there.
It's there.
It's there.
So you turn on a light
or
a faucet, and magically it functions to make our lives easier than the generation before us. And yet these things are engineering marvels. I mean, they really are. But the problem is, John, that for many years we haven't wanted to invest in this basic underpinning of our society because, well, it's there.
Right. We take it for granted.
And it's boring now. I turn on my faucet. It works. So why do I need to worry about whether the pipes need to be relined or whatever it may be? So we've kind of gotten to a point where a lot of the great engineering that you and I are marveling and ogling at today, shall we say, because I have pictures here of the Hoover Dam. You see that
look
picture?
Look at that. That's a beautiful picture.
I know. Isn't that great?
It is.
Well, you have to just imagine it, folks. John and I, we take all the visuals and we bring them and we have them to ourselves. But no, you think about it. We take it all for granted and we don't want to spend a lot of money because we think, well, we need to do new things. We need to do social service programs or we need to do something that we've never done before or there's a new societal implication that we never thought about many years ago. And yet these things really are the foundation of the society.
That's true.
And without it, well, things don't go terribly well. I mean, let's look at it this way, John. I want to take as an example the New York City highway system. Have you driven into New York City recently?
Oh, not recently, but within the past few months I have, yes.
Oh, my goodness. Now, we live outside of New York City, and we're blessed. We live between Boston and New York, and people tell us that it gives us access to the greatest gifts in our society, and it does. But getting into New York, and I generally do it by train, which is no gift itself. But take the highways. I mean, my goodness, folks, you really have to imagine this. You're dodging in and out of potholes. They have lanes that are now, you know, indecipherable as lanes. You've got people who are in such a hurry. The confusion, the congestion, it's disgraceful.
Plus, you look at the GW Bridge and stuff, and you wonder, you see all the rust and stuff, and you wonder about what's going on with that.
Well, you know, one term that really scares me is when we talk about things that are structurally deficient. And we say, but they're passable, but they're structurally deficient.
Right.
You want to take a shot at that a few times and see when that structural deficiency becomes somebody's nightmare and headline?
Exactly.
I mean, really, bridges, I think, scare people more than anything.
Well, it happened here in Connecticut. Right?
Well, we did, the Mianus River Bridge, and there have been others across the country. And we have, I mean, thousands of these, thousands of bridges. And did you ever think, like, what does it take to go and monitor these things? And people really slight often public workers. So think about it. If you've got a Department of Transportation wherever you live, are you confident that they're going out and assessing the safety and the well-being that those of us who are traveling these roads and bridges really should expect? Are you really comfortable with that?
You're right, especially when they're in the headlines all the time that they're making too much money and stuff, and they're probably pissed off.
Or they see three guys on the side of the road watching one guy work, and so you really wonder about it. But seriously, I mean, John, this is a real problem, whether it's the roads or the rail or waste treatment or airports. It's nothing really for us to be too light about. And during the last election cycle, really, I've got to give Donald Trump credit. He compared America's infrastructure to that of a third world. He kept saying that. Yeah. I come into LaGuardia, and I don't know whether I'm in Nairobi or whether I'm in, you know, some potentate's area in the, you know, the desert. So anyway, so we've got congestion on the roads.
That kind of reminds me of our airport here in Connecticut.
Oh, my goodness.
But anyhow.
We had Terminal B. That was terminal, and they got rid of it. I honestly, folks, as much as you may hear across the country that Connecticut has this great quality of life, on many levels we do. But I've got to tell you, there are things that we've fallen way behind on, and infrastructure is definitely one of them. In fact, our governor has proposed a $100 billion program that's seemingly going nowhere at this point.
Well, where's he going to get the $100 million?
The $100 billion?
$100 million.
Million?
Million or billion, whatever it is.
Please.
But that's another story.
That's another story. But we have congestion on the roads. We have trains that continually break down. We have an old air traffic control system that, frankly, we don't even want to imagine
the
implications
of that. Well,
the scary
part is we're behind the time, our traffic control system, compared to other countries. We are terrible. I mean, how did we get to be the
No, we just can't believe that we've fallen into such a disrepair. And again, we talked about those bridges that are structurally deficient. Who can argue with Donald Trump on this point? Now, whether he's going to get a plan pushed through, whether it's going to be a private-public partnership, whether we're going to have to do tax credits to get it, whether we're going to have an appropriation, because some of these things have fallen into a bad light as a result of other stimulus programs that perhaps didn't yield as much as we thought. And so while we're waiting for this massive infrastructure bill that he's promised, why don't we do this, John? Because I think this would be helpful, because we have been trending this way for a long time in terms of laxity as it relates to our infrastructure. Who better could we get? I kept thinking about this and scratching my head, and it was really getting to be annoying because I have psoriasis, and so my wife and dandruff and everything. But at any rate, I decided to go after, and I can't believe that he's come on the program today. I really can't.
Who is it?
Well, it's Thomas Smith III.
Okay.
Now, he is the head of the American Society of Civil Engineers. Now, who better?
Who better
to talk about this?
Right?
And it's not as if they're all civil engineers who don't think about these issues. In fact, they think about them a whole lot. And every year, John, they put together a report card. And you need to go up online, folks, asce.org. When you listen to this, you'll really want to go up there and take a look at your own state. We're not going to break it down state by state. We just don't have time to do that. So we're going to get the national scorecard today. And I'm telling you, if you came home, John, with this scorecard, your mama is going to take out a paddle. But that's where we are. So here on AmericaTrendsPodcast.com, we're going to break it all down. All right. It's not pretty, but it is the picture.
Joining us on America Trends Podcast is Thomas Smith III, and he is the executive director of the American Society of Civil Engineers. And Thomas, tell us a little bit about your organization.
Hi, Larry. Absolutely. ASCE, American Society of Civil Engineers, was formed back in 1852. We have about 152,000 members spread throughout the world in 177 countries, and we are here to advance the science and profession of engineering for the welfare of humanity.
And, of course, you get together. I'm reading about 28 dedicated civil engineers from across the country who have decades of experience and who volunteer their time to deal with infrastructure. And this is something that you take very, very seriously, the condition that our infrastructure is in. Tell us about the composition of the group that you assemble and what you look at when you're looking at how America is doing as it relates to its infrastructure.
Absolutely. Yes, we have a group of experts that we've put together that evaluate 16 different categories of infrastructure. So we have experts in each of those categories. So we look at aviation and bridges and dams, drinking water, energy, hazardous waste, inland waterways, levees, et cetera, et cetera. And they look at a lot of different sources of data and analyze infrastructure. And what they're trying to figure out is how is that infrastructure performing? We give it a simple grading scale, A through F, A being exceptional and fit for the future. And you've probably heard our cumulative grade right now is a D+, which is poor.
Yeah, wow. You took the headline right out of my mouth. So that's wonderful. I mean, it isn't wonderful. And you are tough. You guys grade really hard and not on a curve. Though we go around some of those curves and they're difficult to navigate these days. But tell us, I mean, why is it that America is rating so poorly these days in general?
Well, in general, I think we've taken our infrastructure for granted. You know, we've relied on prior generations. President Eisenhower with the interstate highway system back in the 1950s, and much of it is nearing the end of its useful life. And I think we just take it for granted. Some of it we can see, and when we sit in traffic, we know that when Americans sit more than 40 hours in traffic each year. We realize that, and that hits home. But things like the drinking water lines, that we have one of those bursting every couple of minutes in the United States, 240,000 every year. We don't, that's sort of out of sight, out of mind, and we don't focus on that too much, except when there's a major problem and it shuts down the metro system like we've had in D.C., or it has impacted university systems in California because of impacts energy and transportation as well. So you have a connected system. And every once in a while, we are reminded when our infrastructure disappears on us for a while and we can't rely on it, then we really realize it. So we have a tendency to be very reactive instead of proactive, and that's also what's caused part of the problem.
Well, I know that you look at a range of things, capacity, condition, funding, future need, operation and maintenance, public safety, resilience, innovation. Is there any one of these elements that your 28 civil engineers who are really putting together this report card, is there anything that you look at more important, element than another, or are they all equally important?
Well, certainly public safety is always at the very top of our list. You know, we have a code of ethics for engineers, and canon one of our code of ethics is engineers shall hold paramount to public health, safety, and welfare. So that is a critical part of our analysis. We are very focused on sustainability issues right now. You see that with resilience and innovation. And I think that's part of the concern as well, is that with the infrastructure that we have that was developed sometimes many times 50, 7500 years ago, we're relying on old technology and old innovation, and we really start to have to be preparing for the future, for our own grandchildren, and preparing for them instead of relying on what our grandparents did for us.
Is there a lot of new technology that is being absorbed into the way that we think about infrastructure to make certain we can manage loads better, that we can make certain that there is greater resilience? Is the new technology being really integrated into the old infrastructure?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're seeing more and more of that. And sustainability is one of the things that we're really focusing on a lot now, and life cycle cost. So you're looking at technologies that are not just the lowest upfront cost. We're looking at what is the cost when you plan, design, build, then operate and maintain that infrastructure. So you need different technologies that can reduce your costs over the life cycle, even if they may be more upfront. But, you know, other examples are things like connected and autonomous vehicles. You know, that's certainly coming. It's come in other, in certain industries already. We've seen that with unmanned aircraft, and it's being used in the mining industry. I've seen examples of that with Caterpillar. And I think it's going to be the wave of the future for transportation. It'll be more efficient. It'll be more effective. Sustainability is important, but you'll see, you know, fiber optic lines being lined in the infrastructure in the roadways, connecting our vehicles with the infrastructure that way. So we'll be smarter, more efficient, more effective, and more sustainable in the future.
Let's take a look at some of the individual categories, Thomas, that you focus on. And let's start at A, and that being aviation. And many of us think that we have a great aviation system overall because we have so few injuries related to it and deaths. Lately, the commercial airline industry has been very successful. But then again, at the same time, President Trump during the campaign kept talking about the airports and the disastrous condition that he would see from ours here in the U.S. To those in other parts of the world. You give it a D. Explain why.
Yeah, it's you know, if you look at the world's airports, and you get a sense of this when you travel outside the United States, we don't even have an airport in the United States that's ranked in the top 25 in the world.
Really?
And you heard the president reference LaGuardia, referring to that as being like a third world country.
Yes.
And you know, it's. Again, I think we sort of take for granted that we are able to get to where we're trying to go, but they're becoming overly congested, and that congestion is growing. In fact, it is expected that 24 of the top 30 major airports may soon experience what we refer to as Thanksgiving peak traffic volume, at least one day every week. So we really need to invest in our aviation infrastructure, we're talking about I think a $42 billion funding gap right now between 2016 and 2025.
Let's take another area. Let's say our dams. And, of course, you provide us with a lot of great information if you go up on the website, asce.org. And the average age is 56 years, apropos to your point about another generation having built so much of this incredible infrastructure. You say that these high-hazard potential dams are increasing, and there are over 15,000 of these. What does that mean?
Yeah, those high-hazard dams are those that really, if you have a problem with those dams, you have lives that are at stake in that circumstance. And, you know, we saw that with the Oroville Dam recently, where you had an evacuation that was deemed to be important to protect the potential loss of life, and that's something you don't ever want to take any kind of a chance with. But that was a good example of the investment that we need in our infrastructure, because we have been neglecting this. Due to lack of investment, the number of, you know, these deficient high hazard dams has climbed to an estimated 2,170 or more. Oroville's a good example. We've got to have resilient infrastructure built for the future, and we've got to, you know, we cannot neglect this any longer.
Okay, so we've only given two reports out thus far, aviation and dams, and they both got a D. And D seems to be the favorite letter these days among your civil engineering group, because that's what I see in many cases. Let me give you another one, energy. Now that has,
and I should say that's not our favorite letter. That's
no, just, I know.
We just
know.
Call it like we see it.
A D plus. Transmission, right. Distribution lines, aging equipment, capacity bottlenecks, and demand is getting greater and greater, longer and more frequent interruptions. And we did a segment on the grid, and this is in part what you're talking about. Tell us how we stand there as you see it.
Yeah, well, again, there we've got more existing power lines that were constructed back in the 1950s and 1960s, just like I described relative to our, you know, our interstate highway system. And some of that's with a 50-year life expectancy, really not meant to meet today's significant demand. So we've got, I think, a mix of slowly, you know, energy resources that are slowly undergoing a transformation. As, you know, also, you know, as fossil-fired and nuclear plants are retired, and natural gas, solar, wind, and other alternative resources are growing. So we really do need to invest in this. This is critical for our future, and of course, you know, we think that'll also create jobs, and there's a lot of benefits to this, in addition to sustainability and making sure we're doing the right thing for the environment.
Many of us love our inland waterways, and we think of them as having gotten a lot of attention over the years with the Clean Water Act and the like, and yet you are giving it a D. Explain to us how you define these inland waterways. They're about 25,000 miles that you describe, and why they're in such poor condition, why they're getting a D.
Yeah, that's, you know, this is that intricate system of the, much of it operated and maintained by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It supports more than 500,000 jobs. It delivers more than 600 million tons of cargo every year. About 14% of that is of all domestic freight is being transported over our inland waterways. So most of the locks and the dams on the system are well beyond their 50-year design life. Nearly half of the vessels are experiencing delays. So there again, we really need to invest in these waterways. Upgrades on the system are going to be critical for the future.
And let's tie that with the levees. You talked about the dams being at D. Describe the difference between the dams and the levees and why the levees are getting a D.
Yeah, I guess probably there's been no better example of how important levees are than in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and you realize just how connected our infrastructure is. When you have a failure in one area, what it can do to the rest of the infrastructure system. So in this case, we've got a network of 30,000 to 100,000 miles of levees, and these levees are protecting millions of people in all 50 states and in the District of Columbia. So many of us don't even realize that there are levees that are protecting us. And 60% of the nation's population lives in a county with at least one levee. So this is important. During the floods in 2015, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers levees in the south and southwestern United States prevented more than $13 billion in damage. So that's there again, when we invest in them, you know, we truly save on the back end when we're proactive and not just reactive. And you saw what happened in New Orleans, where we were very reactive, and it ended up costing, you know, $15 billion to put in a storm surge barrier system, which is really a state-of-the-art system that was built. But again, reactively, and we need to be proactive.
I'd be remiss if I didn't suggest that a D, at least by your reporting, says the infrastructure is in poor to fair condition, mostly below standard, with many elements approaching the end of their service life. A large portion of the system exhibits significant deterioration. Condition and capacity are of serious concern, with strong risk of failure. And thus far, just about everything that we've gone through is rated a D, though we are getting to ports, and ports get a C+. And just to define again what a C references, that is, let me just see here, mediocre requires attention. The infrastructure in the system or network is in fair to good condition. It shows general signs of deterioration and requires attention. Some elements exhibit significant deficiencies in conditions and functionality, with increasing vulnerability to risk. So even when you're getting a C+, as the ports are, that's nothing to be terribly pleased about.
Yeah, now that's that actually was an improvement. Our ports grade improved from a C to a C+. So there are some glimmers here that we had seven categories that did increase their grades where there has been investment. Nevertheless, we're not where we would like to be, and we're not where we need to be as the United States of America. In fact, our infrastructure is not even ranked in the top 10 when you look at the World Economic Forum, rankings of infrastructure of other countries. And these ports, of course, are critical to our global trade. We've got 926 ports that are essential to national competitiveness, and they, serving the as a gateway through which 99% of overseas trade passes. So it's very important that we invest in this. They're responsible for $4.6 trillion in economic activity. You know, we've now got ships that are getting bigger post-Panamax, and so congestion at landside connections to other components of the freight network is increasingly hindering ports' productivity. So it does require investment.
You were talking about infrastructure around the world, comparing it to our own. Do other civil engineering organizations around the world look at the same things that you're looking at, and there's an apples-to-apples comparison? Do you trust the information coming from across the world to really suggest that a D here in America is not equivalent to a B somewhere else?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's, you know, we have sections in other countries, and we have relationships with other engineering societies in other countries, and many of them are starting to do report cards of their own. Now, whether they use the exact same system and have access to the exact same data, that is a big issue. But, you know, I'll tell you, if you just travel to a few of the countries, look at some of the countries that have higher-ranked infrastructure than the United States, and get on their transit systems and ride on their high-speed rail, go through their airports, and judge for yourself. You really can tell there's a difference. And the more you travel in some of these developed countries that are really investing in their infrastructure, the more cause for concern there is.
This is Thomas Smith III, and he is the Executive Director of the American Society of Civil Engineering. We're talking about the infrastructure report card that they put out every year. They break it down not only as a national aggregate, but looking at state-by-state numbers. So you really need to go up on their website and take a look at this information. It is very, very interesting. Rail. Now, this is an area where I think a lot of us think we're way behind in rail, and the Chinese are often referenced, and the European countries. And yet you say that we get a B rating in America for our freight and passenger. Explain that.
Yeah, and this B is actually an improvement of from the C plus in 2013, and the B is the highest grade, yes, in the 2017 report card. We've got over 160,000 miles of track, over 100,000 rail bridges, 800 tunnels. So it's a critical part of our transportation system and economy. About a third of our U.S. exports to ports and other distribution centers are delivering 5 million tons of freight. And then we're also transporting about 84,000 passengers every day on our rail. So one of the areas for improvement that's driving the rail grade is the freight industry. Freight rail industry owns the majority of the nation's rail infrastructure. They've made significant investment in recent years to meet the current and future needs and to accommodate changing cargo trends. There are still pretty big challenges, and anyone who travels on Amtrak on the East Coast, as I do frequently, knows that on the passenger rail side, we've got increasingly congested corridors, and there are safety technology concerns. Replacing 100-year-old bridges is a concern. Improving rail interconnections with other aspects of the freight network for a more efficient system. So we still have some challenges ahead of us on the rail side, but we have shown progress, and we've seen what happens when private industry rail industry has invested, and it's made a big difference.
You raise a very interesting point. That being in America, how do we look at the responsibility to maintain some of these pieces of infrastructure, the public sector versus the private sector, and how well coordinated are those efforts?
That is a critical issue for the future. As we look at, we know that it requires more investment. ASCE believes that investment needs to come from the federal government, the state, local government, as well as the private sector. This issue of public-private partnerships, very important part of the future, not the only solution. We don't believe that it will, you could anywhere near close the infrastructure gap, which we estimate to be about $2 trillion as the gap that's needed in investment between now and 2025. So over the next 10 years, we're looking at $200 billion a year that's needed to close that gap. Private industry is part of the solution, only a percentage of the solution, and certainly not anywhere near the entire solution. And ultimately, with private industry, when we get private investment, and we've had some very successful private investment here in Virginia. We have toll roads that have been put on Route 495. We're looking at toll roads now on Route 66. We're doing it on 95, 395. So We're seeing some successful public-private partnerships, and many other states are enabling this and starting to look at this as well. But, you know, ultimately, all of us, those of us who use infrastructure, are going to have to pay for infrastructure. So, you know, we can pay a tax, we can pay a toll, we can do this with vehicle miles traveled. There are other ways, but ultimately, we've got to be willing to pay for it. Infrastructure is critical to our quality of life. And there's no magic solution that where other people are willing to pay for it for us. We're going to have to pay for it one way or the other.
It's an interesting point that you raise about funding, because a lot of people say that the closer the government is to people, the more in touch they are with their desires. And yet, I'm reading on your report card that schools, for example, in America get a D+. And when you look at the fact that local school boards are very much tethered to local residents, they're very close to home. Obviously, it's about our children, and yet 24, so almost a quarter, are in fair or poor condition getting a D+ from you. That says to me that there is a disconnect going on between even local government and their people about the importance of maintaining facilities.
Yeah, having kids who've come up through the public school system here in Fairfax County, and we've got a wonderful school system here, but each one of my kids have taken classes in trailers. The infrastructure for the schools, in my opinion, and looking at the data, is nowhere near what it should be, again, for the United States of America. And this impacts student performance. You know, quality facilities is important to improving student achievement, reducing truancy, raising staff morale and retention. So it's something that really requires investment for the future.
We will get to bridges, folks, and roads in just a moment, but I want to talk about drinking water. That has been in the news, and of course, Flint, Michigan, but I'm ripping from the headlines of the Wall Street Journal. Pittsburgh grapples with lead in water. 7 U.S. water systems are under scrutiny in the aftermath of Flint, and that the drinking water, now you talk about something of great importance to all of us, getting a D rating from your organization.
Yes, as I mentioned about the leaking pipes and the 240,000 water main breaks per year, and how that impacts other areas of infrastructure. As you referenced, Flint, Michigan was another good example. Mark Edwards, in fact, is one of our members who was just recognized with an award from an Engineering News Record just last month for the role that he and a lot of his students at Virginia Tech played in helping to address that issue and identify that issue. But nothing more important than drinking water. I mean, we don't just need that for our quality of life. We need that for life itself. And that's something we shouldn't take for granted just because it's, again, out of sight, out of mind with the water lines. We've got a lot of waste. Over 2 trillion gallons of treated drinking water is wasted every year due to leaks. We can and need to do significantly better than this. We have, you know, we've got the technology, we've got the experts to work on these types of things, but we've got to invest in it, and that means we as Americans have got to be willing to pay for it, recognizing how important drinking water infrastructure is to our quality of life and to our life itself.
Well, here's something that we don't take for granted because we're driving over them every day. We're reminded when there's a congested situation or just a very difficult way to get around that this is costing us time and money, and yet we're still not investing. Chronically underfunded is the term that you use in your report. Roads rated a D, and 2 out of every 5 miles are congested. Why do we put up with this?
Well, that's a good question. In fact, we believe that by failing to invest in our infrastructure, and roads is a very good example, we put a hidden tax on everybody. And we believe that hidden tax is $3,400 per family per year, about $9 a day that we pay. Because we sit in traffic, we have to repair our cars, and we have to added costs of goods and services because we're not moving our freight and people as efficiently and as effectively as we can. And all of us, you know, at least many of us can identify this depending on where you live, some more than others, but certainly here in the Washington, D.C. area. And I was just talking to someone this morning who has just got back from Los Angeles, who was lamenting something very similar. The amount of time that's spent, wasted, in traffic. It impacts our quality of life. It increases stress levels. You know, we spend more than a full vacation every year, average American, sitting in traffic. That's time that could be spent doing other things and adding to our quality of life in other ways. So there are, you know, I mentioned connected and autonomous vehicles and modern technology and looking forward. There are things that we can do. It's not just adding new lanes to existing roadways, and the investments in transit are important. When we talk about transit, how important that
well,
is.
Well, as a corollary to the roads, I mean, you look at transit as well. So you look at buses and commuter trains and water taxis and all the like.
Absolutely.
And that gets a D-.
Yes. Yes, and here in the Washington, D.C. area, a lot of people can relate to that with our metro system. We have gone for decades without investing in the operation, in the maintenance that's required for our metro system. As a consequence, we're having to shut it down. We had a fly-in a couple of years ago. We had the entire metro system was shut down that day for safety reasons. The entire system on the day that we were bringing members in to come in and talk to our legislators. It actually helped to drive a point. The transit is extremely important when you talk about sustainability and moving people effectively and getting people off the roads so that can help to free up the congestion on the roads. And here we have a D- in our transit system, you know, the lowest grade that you've got. And so transit's important for sustainability and effectively moving people. And you can't continue to kick the can down the road and defer maintenance. We've got a $90 billion maintenance backload on our transit systems.
One more, if we can take it. Bridges, getting a C+. But there are so many people who worry about bridges and going over bridges without feeling that they might be structurally deficient. They're just very nervous going over waterways in that way. You remind us that 4 in 10 of these bridges, and we have almost 615,000 in the country, are 50 years old and older. I mean, that's a substantial number to be looked at and inventoried and analyzed on a regular basis. It's got to really frighten certain individuals, particularly when you do read in all of our states that there are so many that are what they call structurally deficient.
Yes, that's exactly right. We've got, 188 million trips every day taken on our nation's bridges, and the average bridge age is 43 years old. And as you mentioned, you've got a pretty large percentage that are 50 years or older. And we've got over 9% of the nation's bridges are considered structurally deficient. So we do, obviously a lot of inspections on bridges. And we've got some wonderful bridges in this country, but we cannot continue to, just defer maintenance and upgrading. And it certainly is a concern.
Thomas, in closing, I mean, you've given us quite a picture that we're looking at here. In composite, it's not terribly encouraging. Should we all be really nervous about this? Are you feeling that we can dig our way out of these D ratings in the next 10, 15, 20 years when you hear about a big infrastructure bill? How far along does that take us if we ever get it done? What's your feeling?
I'm very optimistic. What I just outlined here, I think people are recognizing this because I think many citizens are feeling this. And again, especially as I mentioned, when you travel, you see it compared to so many other countries. The conversation has changed. Both candidates were talking about this during the election. You've heard President Trump talking about this, the $1 trillion investment. Now, we haven't seen any action yet. But I think it's important for all of us to keep the pressure on to make sure that the promises that have been made are actually fulfilled. There's a recognition that this would be good for the economy. It's good for jobs. It's also good, important for our quality of life and our global competitiveness. I think that recognition is there. What's bogging people down now is in how do you do this? And it requires a significant leadership and planning. It requires significant preparation for the future and innovation and resiliency. And it requires significant investment. And we've got some specific ideas on how to do that. And I think when you look at the investment options, you got to say it's almost all of the above. It's federal, state, local, and private investment. So you got to look at all of those options and don't take one and exclude the others. It's important that you keep all those options on the table. And I think we will make progress. I truly do.
I do recall looking at one highway project here in our state, and it required about 150 permits from many different groups within government. Do we have a tangle of bureaucracy that's also holding us back to some extent?
And there's been a fair amount of discussion about that, streamlining the project permitting process across all the different infrastructure sectors, and we do think that's important. It's definitely important to start to try and reduce the time from the permitting time periods that are out there. However, we have to make sure that in the process we're safeguarding our natural environment, so environmental, historic, heritage protections. All those different protections, I think, are really important, but we do need to streamline the process. We've got to be more efficient so that we can get this done faster.
Thomas Smith III, Executive Director of the American Society of Civil Engineering, thank you so much for being with us today on America Trends Podcast.
Oh, thank you, Larry. I've enjoyed it.
Appreciate
your time.
Thank you so much.
If you like this episode of America Trends Podcast, will you please leave us a kind rating or a review on iTunes? John, is that too much to ask?
No, or even a comment. Give us in the comment section on the ones that you liked. And, you know, you can also email me at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. And that's another way you can contact us with your ideas.
Don't forget, your review really is important to us. And John, they may say, why is it so important? Well, the Well, the more you like us, the better placement we get, which then helps us improve our rankings and visibility so that more people can enjoy us. And the more people, John, you see how this is spiraling?
It's getting out of control.
The more people who know about us and like our content, the greater chance we have to encourage advertisers to hop aboard. You see how it works now, John?
I understand now. That's very interesting.
And we don't want these folks who are listening to miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. I mean, we're recording tons of them, aren't we?
No, and they're all very interesting, and we got some really good stuff coming up.
Oh, we really do. But we want you to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com. And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms is @TrendsPodcast. We want to thank you personally for subscribing. In fact, John may have a very beautiful thank you gift. John, what is it? No? Ran out of them?
All out of gifts.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
sorry
please,
about that.
Please send us your ideas and questions for future episodes and topics on America Trends Podcast. We can't think of them all, right, John?
That's right.
I mean, my head's already exploding.
Oh, yes.
You see it? Cloud above. Is there an author you'd love to hear from? Or a subject you'd like to learn more about, send us your ideas on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or use #TrendsPodcast. You can also add an email address if you have one that you want to give out. And we do not, right, John? We don't share our list.
No spamming, no list getting out. You just get our newsletter.
Absolutely. And you can access our full show archive on our website at americatrendspodcast.com. For more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on our upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. Oh, by the way, and John, this is really important, and you know.
What is it?
Well, if you buy from Amazon, we have joined their associates program. So you go to americatrendspodcast.com before you purchase, and you click over to Amazon from our Amazon store.
That's a very good point, because it doesn't cost them any more money to do that.
No, that's all built in.
And then we get a few pesos.
Yeah, but
keep that podcast going.
You know, if we get a small VIG, you know, 2 or 3%, if you don't do it through us, you're just giving more money to Jeff Bezos.
Exactly.
And he doesn't need any more money.
He doesn't need it. That's
and he doesn't
correct.
Do any podcasts, I don't think. So please, with no added cost to you, it helps us to bring you the content that you're enjoying. And thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Please keep listening.